Though the singers look like male fashion models, the early music vocal quartet New York Polyphony can sound downright medieval, and is likely to on Monday at the unlikely venue of Friends Central School in Wynwood, in a free concert of the kind of music that has landed the group a recording contract with the Swedish label BIS, and concerts across the country. The Philadelphia Inquirer's David Patrick Stearns visited two of the four members in Manhattan after they finished singing a church service, their day jobs, and discovered that neither their look nor their sound is misleading. New York Polyphony is devoted to its religious repertoire, but is anything but sanctimonious.
Four voices and one brain. That's the usual approach that one hears in any number of small vocal groups dedicated to excavating the hundreds of great Renaissance-era masses and motets, many of them masterpieces, unheard by anyone for centuries. However, the four members of New York Polyphony aren't about to subvert their personalities to the glory of God. They're more like four brains than end up sounding like something more than four voices. Somewhere along the line, the group began to be described as a vocal string quartet. Tenor Stephen Caldicott Wilson doesn't mind that a bit.
Audiences are used to seeing a string quartet on stage, sitting in a semicircle, communicating with each other, leaning into a phrase, and demonstrating with their body and with their bow how they're going to approach a downbeat or how they're going to finish a piece. And the idea of a vocal group of our small size doing a similar thing and watching, I mean, my mom said, how do you cut off and start together? And I said, we just feel it and we look at each other. And that's, it's not unusual in the vocal world, but I think it's more common in something like a string quartet.
Some members of this quartet came to early music from opera, such as bass Craig Phillips. Wilson had a year of musical theater training before he became a busy oratorio singer. Outside of New York Polyphony, baritone Christopher Dylan Herbert also identifies himself as a social media consultant and an expert on Middle East culture. Yet Phillips assures us that there's at least one expert in the bunch, and that's countertenor Jeff Williams.
He is a dyed-in-the-wool early music geek. You should see his iPod. If you go to, like, song title, On Use Day, there's, like, hundreds of On Use Days on his iPod.
The music from this group's latest album, End Beginning, represents a bit of a landmark, an international CD release in a slow rise that began in 2006, more or less by chance, when the original members were hired to make a rather low-concept Christmas album, just voice, no tinsel. Bass Craig Phillips says that not only did they blend together, but that the distinctive lineup of voices, two singers in the bass register rather than one, gave the music a distinctive tint.
We can really explore some remote keys, some really dark keys. One of the tunes on the first record, we did the Coventry Carol. I think we do it in like E flat minor, some like very, you know, flat key, dark, low something. That really got a lot of attention because it was new sounding to many people. So in a way, some of that is that robustness just has to do with where our ranges, how they work. But we do sing with an intensity to vocalism that I think that plays back into the string quartet aspect of it, that we want to preserve the qualities of our voice.
I think once we make a choice, we do it. As my undergrad voice teacher used to say, don't sing about the song, sing the song. Like, get in it, do it. And so if we make a choice to sing triple piano, then the sound of four guys singing triple piano is really thrilling.
That comment by tenor Stephen Caldicott Wilson partly explains why much of New York Polyphony's concert career has successfully unfolded not in the early music centers that could recognize its distinctive qualities, but places that hear very little of this period of music in any form. The group's performance electricity overrides any need for prerequisite knowledge of where this music originally came from. And don't mistake these guys for Manhattan snobs. When they were still managing themselves, they would comb the internet for churches, Ontario, Oklahoma, wherever, that have strong music programs, and after landing a concert would expand out geographically. Once there, they would talk to audiences, explain what they're about, do a lot of singing, and then go out to a funky roadhouse joint to sample the local barbecue. And it was during one such visit to the hinterlands, Wichita, Kansas, that New York Polyphony recorded a Gregorian chant and, through the trendy, edgy Indaba music, started a contest for the best remixes. They received hundreds of submissions using countless forms of electronic manipulation, says Craig Phillips, and the result was the album titled Devices and Desires.
In fact, one of the winners was a composer, a woman based in Dublin, and she did an all-vocal remix where she sang over top of what we did, and it was very cool. We tried to be as respectful, you know, not try to be carpetbaggers and try to be like, oh, we're really cool and we're going to do some remixing. We did what we did in 100% early music geeky fashion and say, here, Gregorian chants, go. Gregorian chant is very much at the genetic level in Western music. I mean, these melodies are, we may know unconsciously because they have been so pervasive. And so our tack on this was using tools available to 21st century musicians. Let's start a new conversation about how this music can be manipulated.
What the group eventually realized is that this remix thing happened all the time in distant centuries, not technologically speaking, obviously, but conceptually. Songs and chants were repurposed endlessly, used as a backbone, floor plan, or jumping-off point for any number of composers' own creative ends. Some of the most daunting motets were actually musical collages consisting of elements that sometimes barely belonged in the same piece. So what started out to be a bit of a lark for New York Polyphony has come to have more validity than anybody thought. But if anybody pursues this sort of thing in the future, it's probably not going to be these guys, partly because Phillips, in particular, believes so much in the power of unmediated sound in a resonant acoustic space that creates an experience in which singers and audience are enveloped in the same musical sphere.
There's no amplifiers, there's no microphones, there's nothing between what we do and the audience. People are so used to hearing things that are, you know, so edited and so filtered and compressed and auto-tuned that to actually hear four guys stand in front of them with just music folders and make noises with their mouth, I think that we're getting some people that are really thirsty for that kind of experience, that they are in the instrument with us.
So when are we going to get some Philadelphia polyphony? Renaissance choral repertoire is the one gap in the city's classical music landscape. The excellent choral organizations in town rightly tend to go for modern repertoire. Contemporary choral music is among the best stuff being written today, and that's what's needed to renew the medium. Also, it's hard to believe that this 14th, 15th, and 16th century music that has laid dormant for so long is actually all that great. So many people have asked, now really? Is there anybody as great as Beethoven back there? Actually, there's greater.
The Philadelphia Inquirer's David Patrick Stearns. New York Polyphony performs at Shawcross Hall at France Central School on City Avenue in Wynwood on Monday evening at 7. The event is free and open to the public.
Everything you hear on WRTI is made possible by members. Please join today.